This is Pet Life Radio. Let's talk pets.
And we are ready to roll. Here I am live on Pet Life Radio at the best, Dr. Jeff. You're here live with Dr. Jeff Werber and on Instagram Live. Here for you, here for your pets. Anything you want to talk about, I'll start by saying I hope you all had a safe 4th of July. Hope none of you had pet issues. I know I get a lot of questions about it. You know, it's funny. Whenever there seems to be a shorter week and people think, oh, that's so great to get an extra day off. No, it's not so great. It's not so great at all because what happens is I'm going to see the same number of patients that I would see in a week. But instead of getting him into 5 days, I have to squeeze him into 4 days. So it was really, really a crazy, crazy week. All right. Good question. Ivy Blue Eye. Good morning. Can you go over heat safety and water safety of dogs in this weather, especially people whose dogs consume too much water? Aha. So yes, that's a great question. I'm getting a lot of people joining. I want to wave. That is a really good question. So let's start. Why not? So the heat is really potentially very bad for dogs. Body temperature gets too high is very bad. Body temperature gets too low is very bad as well. So the thing that I say most often is that dogs need adequate supply of water. They need shade, especially if you're living in really, really hot climates where it's getting into the, you know, high 90s, hundreds, dry heat. I mean, it's really tough on them. So you have to have some place for them to get away from the heat and in a shade, whether it's, you know, a little doghouse, whether it's just an awning. I mean, obviously, if you can, keep them in an air-conditioned house. That would be really cool. Some of these long-haired Arctic breeds do poorly in the heat, though. Interestingly, that coat is an insulator. So it does keep them cooler during the hot weather. It keeps them warmer during the cold weather, kind of like a thermos. You put hot coffee in a thermos, it stays hot. You put an ice cold drink in the thermos, it stays cold. That's kind of what their coat does. But water is essential and shade is essential. Can dogs overheat? Absolutely. Now, if you have short coated dogs, and especially dogs that like to lie on their backs and sunbathe, if you will, they can actually get sunburn. And cats also, the tips of their ears, because if you look at a cat in the temporal region, that's the area right in front of the ears on their foreheads, it's always very thinner. That hair there is not as thick as it is everybody else. They don't get the protection. So, and that's why when, for example, white cats get squamous cell carcinoma, it happens there and in the ears because there's very little protection there. So that also is important. Now, water safety. If you have dogs that are swimmers, and I have one such dog, he's a Labrador Retriever. He's 12. Now, mind you, he doesn't have the strength in his back legs that he used to. So his body position in the water, instead of like this, is now like this. So he's really fighting. And what happens is as he becomes less buoyant, as his legs start to lose the ability to keep him way above the water, as they swim, especially if they're chasing a tennis ball, which he does, he is taking in a lot of water also. And there is something called water toxicity. You get too much water, it can basically swell the brain. So just like not too little water is not good, they get very dehydrated, but too much water is bad. And if it's salt water, it's even worse. Now, I'm not talking about the salinated pools like we have that has some salt, use less chlorine, and it's more, you know, salt purification. But ocean water is very salty. So what happens is salt retains fluid. So when they get too much salt in their system, then it doesn't let that fluid go. And that really can cause some brain swelling. And they get what's called edema in the brain. So that's really serious. So too much water, no good. Too much heat, no good. But you need to provide water because they dehydrate more rapidly in the heat. Now, a great trick I learned years ago, and depending on what kind of water supply you have, I have something called Lixit, which is great. It's a little spigot that goes onto the water faucet coming out into the backyard or whatever. And it makes it like a hamster water feeder. So they just have to lick this little device and the water comes out. It's great. That way you're not leaking water and losing water all over the place. Some dogs like to play with a water bowl. So what do? If you have, you have to anchor it somehow or get a really heavy water bowl or put some rocks at the bottom, something that keep it from tipping over. But heard a great trick years ago. You take a bundt pan, you know, it's got the hole in the center. You take a wooden dowel, about a half inch wooden dowel to an inch wooden dowel, depending on the hole. You bang it into the ground, okay? And then you put the water bowl over that. So that anchors it so the water bowl can't tip over. So if you have one such crazy retriever as I did when he was younger and thought the water bowl was just another toy to play with, then that's a great way to keep the water in the bowl and not running around so where they're having a problem. Okay. What does it mean when a dog chews on his feet? So this is from Whiteacre 7, and it's a great question. I love these questions. Chewing feet this time of year. So there are a number of reasons for it. So first of all, so if it is seasonal, in other words, it only happens during spring and summer, then it's probably a seasonal allergy. Atopy, atopic dermatitis, animals that are reactive to certain pollen, certain things in the air, grasses, weeds, trees, etc., fleas. So when we see seasonal allergy, then we can see seasonal foot chewing. That's called atopy. Now, there's also, if it's non-seasonal, we have to think of something that's around all the time. So that could be either a contact irritant, something in the house, maybe a reaction to carpet or a cleaner, something that's used around the house and they're always stepping on it, something outside, even grass, the seasonality of grass, it's always there. So it may not be pollinating, but the actual grass itself, fertilizer. So when they're walking on certain surfaces, certain things that can cause a problem, then again, they can get foot chewing, foot licking. Now, there is another cause of foot chewing that is non-seasonal. That means it's happening all the time. And that is food allergy. So when we see food allergy, food allergic dogs, first of all, the main culprits seem to be poultry, chicken, turkey, and beef, and corn and wheat. Now, if you look at those ingredients that are probably historically in most of the foods. So they've developed a sensitivity to those foods. So for one thing, we need to find out what they are not sensitive to. And for that, we're looking at what's called a single protein and a novel protein, single antigen, novel protein diet. That means a protein they probably have not been used to seeing. I mean, weird things. You're looking like duck and bison and rabbit and venison and kangaroo and tilapia and cod, maybe salmon. So you want to feed them something that they probably have not been exposed to before. Second thing is you only want a single antigen. That means a single protein, a single source, and a single, whether it's a grain or a vegetable, something like that. So the more you put into a food, the more he eats, the more likely that he or she may be allergic to something. And then you're going to blow this guy, it's not the food because he's still doing it. No, he's doing it because you put one of those things in there that he was sensitive to. So you just got to be really careful. Another option, which is probably the best, is a protein that is a hydrolyzed protein or a broken up protein that is only protein fragments. So the body doesn't look at them as a foreign invader and doesn't try to attack them because it's never seen it before, because it's only pieces. So it still has amino acids, still they still get broken down. The body still uses them, but the actual food itself is not a problem. So those are things to think about. Now, there's one more thing. This is what I see it a lot. And people are like, no, I can't be. He's so good. Anxiety and stress could cause foot chewing. Think of it as like a nail biter or a thumb sucker. It is just a release. It's something that makes them comfortable. And one of the ways you can tell is when dogs are licking their feet, what you would consider in excess. But if you look at the feet themselves, they don't look abnormal. They're not red. They're not raw. The hair isn't tinted like a dark brown or we call saliva staining. They're just normal. That is a dog that probably is just doing it to find some comfort. And it's no rhyme or reason. I mean, if a dog has an allergy, they're doing it all the time. If a dog is doing it when they're by themselves or when you leave or they're doing no damage, when they're doing no damage, there's a strong likelihood that it's not a super serious problem. Again, we could try by giving it like an anti-anxiety medication, something that kind of calms them down, relaxes them. If you keep them occupied, think of this, when you have a really bad itch, you're going to scratch it no matter what. But if you can easily direct the attention on something else and they forget about their feet, then that also could tell you that there's likelihood that it may be something more emotional, more behavioral, and less medical. So keep that in mind. All right, next. My 16-year-old, four-month-old now, Jack Russell Terrier, has another diagnosis with her eyes. Besides being officially blind, she just got diagnosed with hyphemia. All right. So hyphema is blood in the anterior chamber. And that could be from a number of things going on. If already blind, I guess we need to know why she's blind. Is it blind because of a retinal damage? Is she blind because of glaucoma, cataracts. So there are a number of reasons that cause blindness in dogs. And is it, you know, as I said, we have to decide, is it neurological? Is it a lens issue like a cataract? Is it glaucoma, which is high pressure in the eye? These are all things that are doing some damage. So obviously the best answer is going to be if we can know what the ultimate underlying cause is. First of all, you should see an ophthalmologist, a veterinary ophthalmologist. Many GPs, though, like myself, I mean, I do a lot of eye work, but some things like this that require usually specialized testing equipment as well, and a lot of experience is going to be important. So I'd recommend if you haven't seen a veterinary ophthalmologist, get back to me and I will help you find one in your area. But that is something that needs to be addressed because there's a reason for it. And the key really is to find out what the underlying reason is. Then it's something that can be treated. All right. What would cause my 11-year-old cat to stop grooming herself? She is diabetic, which is currently controlled by her DM diet. That's the diabetes mellitus diet by Purina. Her poops have been more frequent and softer for the last 10 days. So that is one of the problems, is the high blood pressure. And that also can cause retinal detachment. So I'm just curious if the blindness may be due to retinal detachment, and the amlodipine is a great drug. And if you get that pressure controlled, there can be retinal reattachment. So that's important to know. Take her to the vet because she continues to breathe like she's gasping for air. A dry cough, allergies, gives medicine drops, and she breathes easier in minutes. For any kind of breathing issue, it could be anywhere from deeper into the respiratory tract to more upper respiratory. So nose and sinus, we call it URI, upper respiratory infection. When we have anything going on in the lungs, then we're worried about like some sort of pneumonia, gasping for air. Now, sometimes when they gasp for air, it sounds like that can be a reverse sneeze also. So when they're gasping for air, that's on the suck in, or if they're coughing, that's on the way out. So it depends. If it's airway disease, then you might be something like some sort of allergic disease, a condition. It could be pneumonia, just an inflammation or an infection in the airways. It could be asthma, which is more of an allergic airway disease. And all of these are somewhat treatable. But again, like with everything else, it's important to get an answer. So I want to go back to other question I had. We have to go back for a refill, so it's not getting any better. Unless we have a real diagnosis and find out what the problem is, a lot of times we treat things for symptomatic relief, which is great because it makes the dog feel better. But it's even better to get an answer and know what we're dealing with. And if we can actually treat the underlying cause, then you'll be obviously a lot more effective in your overall treatment. So sometimes we give medication just to relieve the symptoms, but that's called symptomatic relief. It's really always best, of course, to get to the underlying problem, get the root of the problem, and then we can treat accordingly. Okay, I want to go back to other question we had. All right, so we're going to talk about the cat with the diabetes, and we're going to do this right after our break. It's already 9:19. I'm getting dirty looks from Mark. So we are going to stop for our commercial break and be back after these short messages. Do not go away.
Take a bite out of your competition. Advertise your business with an ad in Pet Life Radio podcasts and radio shows. There is no other pet-related media that is as large and reaches more pet parents and pet lovers than Pet Life Radio. With over 7 million monthly listeners, Pet Life Radio podcasts are available on all major podcast platforms. And our live radio stream goes out to over 250 million subscribers on iHeartRadio, Odyssey, TuneIn, and other streaming apps. For more information on how you can advertise on the number one pet podcast and radio network, visit PetLifeRadio.com/advertise today.
Let's talk pets.
Let's talk pets.
On Pet Life Radio.
Pet Life Radio.
PetLifeRadio.com.
And we are back. So for those of you on Pet Life Radio, we're just talking about this question came from a Halo fan, 53, about an 11-year-old cat with diabetes and stopped grooming herself and her poops have been abnormal and more frequent and softer for the last 10 days. So we're just talking about in general how important it is that when we have an animal with a certain disease, we do need to take the blinders off and remember that this cat's 11 years old. So again, my basic recommendations are, how are we doing with the diabetes control? Are we on insulin or not on insulin? Maybe we need to be. Is it just diet? Is diet enough? Are there some anti-gluconeogenic agents medications that can be taken to decrease the blood sugar. So these are all important. But my experience, most of these cats that get diabetes, certainly older cats, and diabetes in cats is usually type 2, meaning non-insulin dependent, though insulin is often used at the beginning to get them regulated. And then we figure out diet. But these cats are usually obese. So that's another issue that goes here. So we have to find out her weight, where she's at with her insulin control, blood sugar, and more importantly, 11 years of age, I think she should have a full physical if she hasn't had one already. So once we get all that data in, then we can look at things like just diet, stress, anxiety, why the poops have been softer. Maybe it's something else she's getting a hold of. Maybe it's a reaction to the diet she's on. So there are so many possible factors. The fact that she's eating, hopefully she's eating, that's a good sign. So we really need to know a little bit more about, you know, sort of like breaking it down. And as I said, it's very easy to look at this being just a problem with the diabetes. And if the cat were younger and everything else was normal, then maybe it is something simple. And it could still be something simple. But at 11, I'd like to know how everything else is. How's the liver? How are the kidneys? You know, what's going on with the red cells and the white cells? Is this cat in good shape? Other than, of course, that's just diabetes. If it is, then I would look at something more. Think about diet, something in that diet, something she's eating or not eating. Maybe some adjustments need to be made. But you have to start by saying, is she doing well chemically from her chemistry standpoint, well from her complete blood count standpoint, and well from her diabetes control, her blood glucose standpoint? All right. Gallstones. Wow. I'm just starting to think of a link between gallstones and breathing. The only thing I can think of is if the gallbladder is very large. And remember, what sits on the other side of the diaphragm? In the chest cavity, you have the heart and the lungs. Then you have the diaphragm, which is a muscular layer separating the thorax, the chest, from the abdomen. Now, what's on the other side of that diaphragm as you go into the abdomen? The liver. And if there are gallstones and we have a very, very large gallbladder because of the gallstones causing a blockage, then maybe that pressure putting on the diaphragm, I mean, it's a long shot, but you know, that's the only thing I can see as a direct link or a contributory link of gallstones to breathing issues. So I don't know. First of all, you can get the answer easily. Ultrasound, x-ray ultrasound, taking a look at the gallbladder, seeing if it's huge or not, then maybe there will be your answer one way or the other. If the gallbladder is normal, it's not related. But there are some medications that could be used to help with the gallstones. So I'm back to you. So I answered your questions, I hope. All right. Omeprazole for liver damage. Again, not necessarily. I mean, with any medication, if there's a direct sensitivity, then that's possible, but it wouldn't be like a direct link. Now, only DM diet. She was tested out a month ago. She's not obese. Oh, good. So that's good. So that eliminates a few of the things. If the problem, though, is new for the last 10 days, well, first of all, when was the last time she had a full physical? Not just sugar, not just blood glucose. But even still, with this is something new, relatively new, I would do a BG anyway, blood glucose anyway, just to make sure. But look, the more things we rule out, then the more that would lead me to believe that it could be something just simpler, more of a diet-related thing. Maybe adding some fiber to the diet. Maybe adding some probiotics. Don't get panicked that this is definitely a major medical issue. It could be just something as simple as dietary. All right. My five-year-old shows Siamese, sneezes from time to time. No, I don't think so. Cats sneeze. If there's no discharge, nasal discharge, if there is no change in diet, energy, and activity, and stools are normal, if everything else is normal, you know, remember, why do we sneeze? We have little cilia in our noses that are responding to dirt and debris and aerosolized things that cause us to sneeze, and we sneeze. Could we have a little cold? Cats don't necessarily get a cold. They get upper respiratory infection. But with that, they're usually off in other ways. And by the way, cats get a lot of respiratory viruses, in which case there's really no treatment per se. If they have the occasional sneeze and everything else is normal, I'm not worried. If it's something that's persistent, if it's something where there's a nasal discharge or blood and a lot of mucus and snot, then yes, then I definitely need to see the veterinarian. Dog drinks a lot of water. My vet wants to test for Cushing's. Is that the only sign of Cushing's? What else should I watch out for? So the few things that will lead us to Cushing's. First of all, when I have a cat or a dog, all right, that comes in, let's say a dog with Cushing's. The first thing I'm going to think about when I see a dog that's drinking a ton of water It's either going to be just hot thirst, especially this time of year. It's going to be Cushing's. It's going to be diabetes. And of course, they could have some kidney upset, kidney infection. So my recommendation is, of course, do a blood test. First thing you do, blood and urine. Now, you do the blood and urine. If the alkaline phosphatase enzyme, which is a liver enzyme, is extremely elevated and the dog is not on oral or any kind of prednisone, cortisone, or phenobarbital, which are two drugs that usually also increase the alkaline phosphatase, then that puts Cushing's from here on my list to up here. Because one of the things we know, Cushing's is a disease where the body is secreting too much of its own steroid. So it's as if we're giving too much steroid. What does that do? The two things we see, increased alkaline phosphatase and excessive water drinking. So right there, that's a huge clue. If that alkaline phosphatase is high, then I would certainly do what's called an LDDS, low dose dexamethasone suppression test. We used to do something called an ACTH response test. Found there are just too many inaccuracies on that one. That one is good for monitoring dogs that are being treated for Cushing's with Veteril, triclosan, but I don't like to use it as my sole diagnostic aid. Now, let's say the alkaline phosphatase is normal, but there are kidney enzyme elevations or high blood sugar. Well, then if it's high blood sugar and sugar in the urine, it's diabetes. If those are normal too, and the kidneys, then I would think kidney. If all of that is still normal, I would keep an eye and actually measure how much water is being taken in on a daily basis. And if it is way more, because some dogs have what's called psychogenic polydipsia. They just like to drink or they get really thirsty. It could be, there's a antidiuretic hormone. There's also diabetes insipidus, another type. That's the water diabetes where everything is normal, but they just like drinking a lot of water. And there's another test you can do for diabetes insipidus. So there's diabetes mellitus, that's a sugar diabetes. Diabetes insipidus is the water intake diabetes. And for that, you see a specific gravity of water, the amount of dilution in the urine to be extremely dilute. Basically, the specific gravity of urine should be around 10, 18 or higher, up to 10, 50 or 60 in a cat. Okay. If it's 10, 8 to 10, 12, we call isocyanuric. That's the range where the kidneys are not really functioning well. The water coming out is exactly the same as water coming in. It's not reading thirst. It's not reading over intake of water. And then you have, with diabetes insipidus, the specific gravity get down to 10.3. So then you know that it's super, super, super dilute. And then there are some tests that can be done to rule out diabetes insipidus. And now, diabetes insipidus, by the way, is probably, of all the things I mentioned, is the least common. But hey, I've treated many over the years, so it does happen. But I would do is get the blood test and then get the alkaline phosphatase level and then the sugar level and go from there. Hi, Doc. What do you think of the grain-free foods I've been on my dogs, origin grain-free? Someone said it can give my dogs heart complications. Well, we don't know the exact link, but there's definitely an increase in these in the cardiomyopathy in dogs on grain-free diets. Is it direct? We don't know. Maybe indirect, maybe coincidental, maybe something else in the food that, instead of grains that are causing it. All I know, when they look at the building blocks, all right, for the essential amino acids to prevent cardiomyopathy, okay, and they're all there, cysteine and methionine, all right? And so we do know that they're there in ample quantities. The dogs should be able to make their own taurine, which is, by the way, what cats can't make. They have to get it from their meat, which is why cats are obligate carnivores. But dogs, they usually get it, and they can make it themselves, and that prevents the cardiomyopathy. So the answer is we don't know. Now, what about grain-free? Do we think they need to be grain-free? Do they have issues with grain? And the answer is no. So don't get on this kick, anthropomorphizing, and you, we want to eat grain-free, and you have problems with grain, therefore the dogs, no. If they like a food that has grain in it, and they do well, if they were doing well before you switch to grain-free diet. Now, having said all that, there are many, many, many dogs out there that are on grain-free diets and aren't getting cardiomyopathy. So if you've been on grain-free for a while and your dog's hearts are doing great, then don't change. That's okay too. The short answer is we don't know exactly the link, but there seems to be some kind of link. I'm not familiar with that food, so I can't answer it. Is Putin's one food okay? I would say that if for cats, it's a meat diet and it has AFCO certification and your cat likes it and your cat has a shiny coat and your cat has energy and normal stool, then it's probably okay. Oh, Purina. That's, yeah. Purina, if it's Purina, it's probably okay. Purina is, I know a lot of people don't like some of the name brands, but you know, there's a place for everything. I look at it like cars. How many cars can you choose from? And if somebody wants to drive a Chevy or a Toyota or a Rolls Royce, who cares? All right. Does it get you from point A to point B? Right? Can you afford to make the payments? Is it easy to drive? And if the answer is yes, then who cares? So that's how I feel about food. Basically, in my opinion, food is overrated. There are a lot of great foods out there. You know, a lot of people, like, for example, don't like Science Diet. Years ago, went to Topeka, Kansas, to the Science Diet factory. And I'm telling you, you can eat off the floors. That was a long time ago. More recently, I was in Tennessee and I went to one of the IAMS factories. And again, it's amazing. The way they treat their animals is amazing. So it's really something that you don't want to get into all the different foods and the brands, because there are so many good ones out there and everyone has an issue with one way or the other. So that's okay. Dog having boiled chicken and vegetables, can I give her a little bit with the chicken? So yeah, no, that's fine. Boiled vegetables, chicken, as long as they do well on it, then that's fine. All right. I think we are overstaying our welcome here on Pet Life Radio. Happy Sunday to you as well. All right. So I think I'm hoping I said hi to everybody. So we are set to go. Sorry, Mark, I went a little 7 minutes over. Don't hate me that much, but it is what it is. When I get these questions, I have to answer them. All right. Have a great week, everybody. I will see you next week. Same bat time, same bat channel, hopefully. I had some computer issues at the very beginning, which is why I was a minute or two late. And so I figured I'd take advantage of 5 or 7 minutes afterwards, but that's okay. Any questions during the week? You don't have to wait till Sunday. You can reach me here on Pet Life Radio, Dr. Jeff at PetLifeRadio.com, or Worms_DBM on Instagram, or Dr. Jeff at DrJeff.com. Tons of ways to get a hold of me. So if you need anything answered, let me know, and we'll see you here next week. Have a good week. Bye-bye.
Let's Talk Pets, every week on demand, only on PetLifeRadio.com.